And welcome to Stories from the Bunker, the weekly podcast where we look at the weird and the wonderful, and Martin's got the giggles.
Oh,
hello,
yes.
Martin.
Hi.
I'm Robin, and with us is Alex.
Hello there, Robin. How's it going? It's good to be back.
With us.
I know, Alex is the extra guy. Well, last week, Justin stepped in.
Exactly, he did a great job.
He did a great job. It was nice to have him on board. Get lost.
Yeah, people in the comments were very, very nice to Justin. He made a great debut. Please keep me on. Please don't replace me with Justin.
We're glad you're back, and we're sorry about your plans.
Well, what do I say to that now?
I don't know.
You made it weird now.
How are you?
I'm fine.
Good.
I'm fine.
Fine. Yeah, people were worried in your absence.
Oh, no, I'm good. I'm fine. Good. Yeah, don't worry about it. It's fine. That's what are we talking about today?
Good question. Why are we what are you
what
talking about?
What am I talking about? Well, I've got a story to tell you. It's happened in the last century.
Shocking. New news.
So it's current affairs. It's a mystery involving the world's very first desktop computer.
Okay.
And I wonder if you've ever heard of
The last 100 years. Blimey.
First ever desktop computer.
Yeah. I know there was the ancient computers.
Yeah,
wasn't
that's
the
what
ancient,
I was going to say.
Egyptian computer, but that was a long
I thought it was Greek.
I could be Greek. Probably
maybe
Greek, mate.
The one
you're
that was found in a shipwreck.
Okay.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
Should have spoken about that, but it's fine.
Well, now my whole story's been undermined. But you'll be talking about something else, won't you, Alex?
I am. I'm going to be
playing on the same thing.
No. I actually wanted to talk about a piece of news that was in the news this week, not just in the last 100 years, about Prince Andrew.
Hot topic.
Loads of people in the comments have been asking about what we think about this, and obviously we had that royal video recently.
Yeah, last weekend about the royal scandal that may or may not be being covered up by British media.
Exactly. Mm. So I thought we'd talk about this one, which is obviously very recent as well.
Yes, and definitely hitting headlines.
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. And then
I'm going to be doing a quiz at the end of the show, which hopefully you'll enjoy. And also we have our Patreon exclusive episode after
which we'll
be talking about drugs.
Drugs.
So tune in for that. And a crazy stat from a very, very small island where there's a drug epidemic that's you wouldn't expect to be on this particular paradise island.
Ooh.
So
this is interesting.
Yeah.
I'm intrigued.
Talking about that. So if you fancy going and checking that out, head over to our Patreon. I'll put a link in the description as well. Mm. And maybe a card up above if you're lucky.
It's only $1 a month to access
$1.
It, right?
$1. $1. Yes.
So, yeah.
Plural. One singular dollar a month.
Some kind of a subliminal trying to get people to to give more.
Contribute more than $1. And then we're very grateful to all our Patreon supporters. They've been wonderful. They're keeping the channel going. So that's why we reward them with these exclusive podcasts every week. Mm. But in addition to that, we'll be looking at our favorite YouTube comments that we've seen in the last week. But they could be from videos very old or they could be from videos very recent. We'll find out. In the meantime, shall I tell you my story?
Yeah, please.
Let's hear it.
So it's set in Italy. This is about Italy. Mm. But I'll just, for some context, the only reason I know about this is because on the 5th of November, 2019, that's this month, a book called The Mysterious Affair at Olivetti was published. It was written by Meryl Seacrest, and Seacrest was born in Bath in England, but she now lives in Washington, D.C., and she's a renowned biographer. So she's covered people like Stephen Sondheim, Leonard Bernstein, Salvador Dali, and Amadeo Modigliani. She mostly focuses on people who have great minds and innovate. That seems to be the theme to her work.
Cool.
Well, her new book is about a strange mystery involving the Cold War, industrial espionage, and the very first desktop computer.
Mm. That sounds right up our alley.
So have you heard of the Olivetti Company?
It rings a bell. Yeah. Some jinx.
Yeah, well, I started saying after you started, so I tagged on more than a jinx, but thanks.
Well, the Olivetti Company is the subject of this book, and in particular, Roberto Olivetti, to give his Italian name, who ran the company until he died in 1985. He inherited from Adriano Olivetti, who inherited it from Camillo Olivetti, who founded the company in 1908.
Cool.
The company was a huge Italian business, primarily known for making typewriters. It survived both world wars, and in the latter half of the 20th century produced one of the first functioning desktop computers and the first one to be commercially available. It was called the Programma 101. Have you ever heard of it?
Can't say I have.
It does sound quite original, doesn't it? Programma
101.
What did it do? What could it do?
It could do anything you wanted within the limits of its specifications.
Of 1 megabyte.
So the Olivetti Programmer 101, or the P101 for short, was the first commercial programmable computer. So you could turn it into a calculator if you wanted, or you could make it run certain functions. Mm. You could do quite a lot with it, actually, but as long as you knew how to program it. It was launched at the New York World's Fair in 1964 and released on the market in 1965. It had 240 bytes of memory and was about the size of a typewriter, as you might expect from a typewriter company. But it was famous at the time, not only for its technological achievements, because it was the first commercially available desktop computer. It was actually quite small when you look at it. But it was particularly famous for its ergonomical and innovative design.
Cool. It's mad when you think that that was 1964, 1965. Yeah. That was the first desktop computer when, like, 5 years later, you know, we'd landed man on the moon.
In fact,
it's weird just thinking of
the P101 was used for the Apollo 11 program.
Really?
They ran all the spacecraft using a P101.
But the scale of humanity's existence, and then you think about the last 50 years from roughly 60 years from now until then.
Yeah. It is mad, isn't it? Yeah. So the development of the computer was overseen by Adriano Olivetti, who died in 1960. So that's 4 years before it was
one generation
launched.
Before, right?
1960, just 4 years before the computer
was launched. So the generation before the first owner of the company,
the second to last, well, before Roberto. Adriano had a heart attack on a train, and he was ruled to have died of natural causes.
Mm.
But, and I quote Merrill Seacrest here, who says, "The doctor could not be sure and recommended that the family order an autopsy. Most accounts of Adriano Olivetti's death ignore the uncertainty over what caused it and state the natural causes verdict as authoritative."
How old was he, did you say?
Hmm?
Do you know how old he was?
He wasn't that old.
Okay.
50s or something like that.
Yeah.
It can still happen.
No, it can happen. That's the thing. It happened suddenly. In the event, no autopsy was ordered. So we still don't know, actually, what caused his death. During Adriano's funeral, while the family and colleagues were paying their respects, Adriano's office was ransacked. And later, a prototype of the Programmer 101 was stolen.
Ooh, okay. Ooh. Things are adding up.
Yeah, okay. That definitely makes it more suspicious.
Yep. Less than a year later, in 1961, one of the company's leading engineers who worked on the Programmer 101, Mario Chu, died in a car wreck on a notoriously dangerous road. So officials readily accepted that Chu died in a head-on collision. It was him and his driver.
Yeah.
In the accident. But Merrill Seacrest consulted an auto body shop founder, Jose Zamora, who believes the car was not hit head-on, as the official reports suggest. And it's also worth noting that, according to the reports, the car reeked of alcohol, so police inferred that the driver was drunk.
Okay.
But both Mario Chu and his driver were known for not drinking.
Ah, okay.
They were abstainers.
Interesting.
Yeah. So these deaths and the stolen computer plans ultimately combined to lead to a hostile takeover of the electronics division of the Olivetti company by General Electric in 1964, just before they launched the computer. General Electric was one of the eight big computer companies in the 60s, alongside IBM and a few others. The P-101 was subsequently used by NASA to plan the Apollo 11 missions, moon landing, in 1969, and it was used by the US Air Force to coordinate bombing missions during the Vietnam War.
Wow.
It was hugely successful in terms of the American governmental usage.
And it's weird thinking that, like I've never even heard of this before you bring the story up before.
It's crazy. And in 1970, Hewlett-Packard was ordered to pay $900,000, which is about $8 million today, in damages to Olivetti for basically nicking elements of the design for their first calculator, the 9100A.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this has gone on to influence some of the biggest companies in that industry. And got in a lot of trouble as well.
Mm.
Well, a little bit of trouble compared to how much.
It's amazing how important this thing became, especially to America. And this brings me on to the interesting part.
Even more interesting.
Yeah.
So around the time that Adriano Olivetti and Mario Chu and his driver died, the United States saw Italy as an important front in the Cold War. You know, an important kind of barrier, buffer between Western Europe and the Soviet Union. But The Olivetti company wanted to expand into new markets, particularly Mao Zedong's China. They wanted to move into China. The Olivetti company also bought one of its competitors, which was an American typewriter company called Underwood.
Oh, I've heard of the Underwoods.
Yeah. Bought by Olivetti. This was all under Adriano Olivetti's leadership, because although he was anti-communist, he dedicated his life to a quasi-socialist utopian ideal.
Okay.
he was a stonking, whacking, left-wing liberal.
But he wanted to go into China. Was he against communism because he saw Stalinist Russia was oppressive, basically?
He was against the communist regimes.
Yeah.
But he wanted to move into the Chinese market. And he wanted a left-wing socialist utopia.
That's interesting, considering he was obviously an innovator and someone who would benefit greatly from, well, you'd imagine, from capitalist economics.
Well, yeah, I mean, he bought the American company. He bought a competitor. So, you know, he's definitely got a business sense.
Yep.
Now, after Adriano died, Roberto Olivetti took over the company, and he oversaw the launch of the P101 and its successor computers. But the company never really recovered from its sale to General Electric in 1964. And in 1976, Roberto tried to get into politics by running as a candidate for Italy's Republican Party, who, unlike their namesakes in America, is a liberal and social liberal party, again, quite left-wing. Roberto died suddenly and unexpectedly in 1985. None of his obituaries say how he died, and it's still unknown.
Yeah. I mean,
that's weird.
You could go down the kind of genetics route, dying young from heart attacks. Could be. Something more sinister.
Or something else.
Well, you think if the damage was done and the company wasn't recovering at that point, you think that there wouldn't really be much benefit of bumping him off then, right?
That's true, Although unless maybe he knew something that he shouldn't have, or
I don't know,
it's just tying up loose ends at that point.
Well, I mean, the company's still going, but it's been bought up by other things now, and it's kind of a fairly minor wing of a much bigger, I think, American corporation.
And you could kind of tell that it was quite a forward-looking company. Like they knew that they made typewriters, but computers were going to be the next big thing, and they're trying to move into that.
Yeah.
It's fair enough.
I mean, it kind of makes sense. It helps explain why computers are the way they are, because a typewriter company is kind of leading the way in desktop computing.
Yeah. So yeah, that's a good point.
And yeah, it's like, yeah, I'm glad the typewriter company stepped in there. Otherwise, you could have had some kind of, who knows, some very bizarre designs. Well, in her book, Meryl Seacrest doesn't come to any firm conclusions about what happened to the Olivetti company and its CEOs. But she does make comparisons between the strange ways in which Roberto, Mario Chu, and Adriano died and the known methods of assassination developed and employed by the CIA, as staged car crashes and heart attack guns.
Yeah.
Oh, the heart attack gun.
Yeah.
What was it in Italy as well at this time that the CIA were up to?
Operation Gladio.
Gladio. That was that.
Yeah, that started in the mid-60s.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's form.
Yeah. So she suggests that it's certainly possible, though not at all proven, that the Olivetti company fell victim to a conspiracy involving US intelligence and perhaps also US electronics corporations.
Out of interest. What do you think? On a slightly different point.
Yeah.
But related. Seacrest. Have you read any of her other publications?
I have not.
So I was thinking, what's her take? What's her angle? Like, could she be someone that has an audience of people that are...
Well, I think she's got some kind of commercial motivation for taking this approach.
Well, I'm not necessarily saying that, but, you know, it's worth maybe at some point us looking into that and seeing, okay, if she's written lots of other books that are very much kind of skeptical of common discourse, is that something that she...
Yeah, that's worth a... That's a good point.
Brings in an audience.
I haven't read her other books, but they are considered, like, fairly definitive biographies of her subjects in general.
Cool.
And I know the origins of this is actually coincidental. She happened to have met Roberto Olivetti and spent a weekend with him in some kind of resort.
Yeah.
Back before he died, obviously.
Yeah.
And she just wondered, I think she said she came across some note while sorting out old files and just like, oh yeah, whatever happened to him? Found out he died mysteriously in 1985. So she got in touch with his daughter, who was unable to say how he died, and told her this strange story about the computer and what happened.
His daughter was unable to say how he died.
Apparently, how her dad died.
Yeah. That's weird.
Mm. Yeah, it adds to it for sure, doesn't it? Adds to the mystery.
Very strange.
Yeah. Was she, I mean, like, how did she not know? Like, how did no one give her a reason?
I confess, the book, which isn't readily available over here yet, might explain in more detail.
That's really interesting, especially when you look at, especially the methods that they use to kill people.
Yeah.
And also, and
not drinking.
Yeah, there's not drinking, they smell alcohol. And also there's the fact that you said he was this kind of very socially liberal and believed in kind of socialist ideals and wanted to move into China. And Operation Gladio was almost like carrying out proxy. It was like Italy had become a proxy war ground between, you know, the Soviets and the USA, right? Like
it was, more or less, yeah.
It was trying to paint the Soviets as carrying out these terrorist attacks and that kind of thing. So, yeah, it's a lot of interesting coincidences in this one.
Well, that's the thing, that's the word, isn't it? Coincidence. Is it a purely coincidence?
Mm.
Or is there something more to it? I'm divided.
Divided. You're not sure?
I'm not sure. I need to go away and have a look at the different evidence points, I think.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I can make an actual... My snap judgment would be there's more to this than the official report. Of course there is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure to what extent.
Yeah, and it's hard to tell to what extent as well, because Italian police, no offense to them today, but at least back then...
No, don't.
they weren't known for their... You know, they didn't have an international reputation for crime solving.
They still don't have a great reputation.
So it's quite possible that they just made mistakes. That means these deaths were kind of left mysterious.
Yeah.
Or it's possible there was some cover-up going on, or like with Operation Gladio, which we've covered in videos on this channel before, on YouTube, Operation Gladio involved the police and the hard right military telling the police what to do and to cover up certain crimes and to kind of let the blame fall on certain people when it shouldn't have done. So there's definitely...
And it's going to be those same policemen within this time frame as well.
Exactly. That's what I find really intriguing about this whole thing. It's the timing. That this is going on to this particular company, which is developing the world's first desktop computer, the first commercially available desktop computer, whose plans are stolen. And we know American companies are stealing ideas because of Hewlett-Packard and General Electric buying them up. And... the mysterious death of the company's CEO, combined with his desire to sell this product to China, basically.
The fact that it is in this battleground as well. You're thinking the Soviets want to get hold of this technology and the secrets from the company. The US do too.
Yeah.
Maybe a race to see who can get them first, especially with the office being ransacked, like you said.
And back then, I think it's true to say that America's attitude was, if you're not with us, you're against us. It definitely wasn't. There's no middle ground. Like, you could be a lefty, but if you're left, you're a communist.
Pretty much.
Which is how all kinds of coups happened in Africa and the Middle East, because America assumed that it wasn't worth the risk having a left-wing person in power.
Pretty compelling.
I'm still... I need to know a lot more, and I actually would quite like to read the book to find out exactly what her argument is. Apparently, this conspiracy angle only takes up the last third of the book. Like, the rest of it is more of a kind of biography, and then it kind of goes into this.
I'm interested if she's sounds like we're doing promotion for Mary Seacrest. if she's got other books out where she's interviewing all these amazing minds, that sounds like a really interesting thing to actually look at.
Do you know where you might find these? what's their recommended retail price?
Anyway.
Yeah, this isn't actually promotion. I just found this book. but you're all on... It sounds like we're all kind of on the fence.
I think I'd like to know some more. Yeah.
I'm on the fence, but skeptical of the official reports, for sure.
Yeah.
Or lack of.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, something's going on. But what do you guys at home listening to us think? Please let us know either by email, alltimeconspiracies@gmail.com, or by Twitter. I'm @alltimerobin.
@alltimemartin.
@AlexBrownATC. I was third then, I had time to think about it in my head. I pay a lot of attention to that thing.
Please do get in touch with us via Twitter or email, or if you're watching us on YouTube, comment below and we'll respond next week. Actually, we do need to give our viewers an answer about last week's quiz.
What happened? I wasn't here.
So Justin had a buzzer in the quiz.
Oh, yeah.
He did. And it was a sound from a film. And he said, can you guess the film? And I don't think anybody correctly guessed what the film was, but it was a sound made by Ian Holm, who you may know from Lord of the Rings as Bilbo Baggins, from the film Brazil. So anyone who recognized that sound, Well done.
You know, I thought for a second you were going to say the answer from the quiz was who pushed the buzzer first for that. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah, of course.
I haven't looked back yet. So also, if you have seen the last quiz, watched it all the way through, let me know. Although I probably will go and check it after this.
There was
Who won the quiz?
Justin won the quiz, but there was a contentious moment where he
of course
got,
he did.
He buzzed yeah. without even...
Justin's a smart guy.
I buzzed in. Yeah. And Anna clearly had buzzed in, and then he pushed the buzzer and just said it.
Mm.
I was like...
Yeah. I mean, he didn't wait for me to recognize him to give his answer, which is bad. But I couldn't tell you who actually buzzed first. So
I'm fuming still to this day.
You got to let that stuff go, Martin. So now holding on to that anger is not good for you.
From now on, I'm the quiz master.
From now on. Rugby. It's just going to be rugby
the whole thing.
Also, it's a bit weird that you carve Justin's face into your arm and you just keep stabbing it. I mean, that's a really strange thing to do. But anyway,
I'm not actually angry, by the way, just so people know. Right. I'm just furious. Carry on.
Well, shall we look at your comments?
Let's have a look at some comments. Yeah.
So I've got a comment from last week's podcast and the discussion about superpowers, which is the story you told us, Martin, about a man who'd had a brain injury and then was able to play the piano like amazingly well.
Well, he dived into a swimming pool, shallow end of a swimming pool, bumped his head badly. He was able to play, I think he was able to play well, but he was able to compose having notation, basically visioning notation coming into some way.
Wow.
To be able to play.
That's so weird.
So
was he musical beforehand?
He played the guitar.
Sorry, I'm just going into the story.
Yeah. He played the guitar, but not the piano.
Oh,
yeah. So like Alex and you haven't seen the episode, do go back and watch it
now.
I'll go and have to watch.
But as part of that, we asked our audience, what superpower would you like if you had
a brain injury?
And the Ghost of Sabotage, it's a great song, says, if I had a superpower, it has to be the power of flight, since I hate the price of tickets. But if I had something more else than languages, both written and spoken, as in, I think, the ability to understand languages written and spoken.
The other good thing, other than price, the other good thing about flight is that there's no carbon emissions from flying yourself.
Would be carbon neutral, wouldn't it?
Yeah,
it's true. You're assuming that. Yeah. You don't know.
If you're flying yourself on your own, just the whiplash from the wind and all the insects.
It's true. You need a windshield.
You need some wipers. You need a proper suit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, like if your main motivation for wanting to fly is because you're the tickets are a bit expensive, that's just there's something really deeply sad about that.
Superpower, it's a bit expensive, isn't it?
This, to fly just so I can get from A to B a bit, you know, cheaper.
I'm not caught up in the logistics of this, because if your intention is to fly internationally, or at least say from coast to coast in America, those are long haul flights, right? So you have to go really high to save time, otherwise you're just going to spend hours and hours and hours hovering few hundred meters above the surface of the earth, right? So you have to fly really high, but then the oxygen's too thin, you know, and you're going to be exposed to great levels of radiation from the sun's rays.
See, this is why superpower was just
be really cold as well. You just get
gonna be freezing
and burnt.
Yeah, freezing and sunburned.
So you haven't thought this through.
Okay, I've got a comment on also on last week's podcast from London Sabres. Again, when we were talking about different things, and in the comment section, there was a bit of a conversation about the condition where you feel permanently drunk. I think we mentioned
that was the thing. But
and London Sabre says there is indeed a condition where you feel permanently drunk. It's called your 20s.
Hey,
that was a good joke. Which I thought was quite good. That was funny. So cheers, London Sabre.
Well, I missed that one, didn't I?
Well, I've got a question that I'd like to ask you both, and it will also hopefully lead on to a nice segue into my new story. But this was regarding our most recent video on the royal family and the royal scandal.
Yes, yes.
Christopher R. puts this out there. He says, the monarchy is an outdated concept. I will never bow to anyone who through a fluke of birth is born into power and done nothing to gain such respect. What strong comment. 22 upvotes. What do you guys think?
I'm quite conflicted, personally. I think the monarchy is an institution. I don't necessarily think that it's a great thing to have, especially when we're using up taxpayers' money to pay for it. At the same time, I don't like people when they say all they do is sit on a jet. They do, apart from Prince Andrew and a few select others. I think that a lot of the time they get criticised for acting a way in which they are supposed to act based on their role. As in, like, someone like Prince Harry and Meghan Markle going to Africa, people can easily criticize and say, oh, they're just getting a holiday out in Africa. Yeah, it's like, yeah, well, they're not deciding to be there, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not necessarily their decision to go and do this work. Mm. I think there's some good charitable stuff that the royal family does as well. Mm. I'm not a royalist myself, but I think that it's unfair to criticize based on someone's birth as much as it is unfair that they get status and power based on their birth too.
Yeah.
That's a great point, yeah. I mean, there's kind of unfairness to the fact that they... are like born into that extreme privilege to be, emissaries and diplomats all across the world. But at the same time, that comes with a lot of...
crap.
Yeah. And they didn't... again, they were born into something that they didn't have a choice in the matter with. Mm. So it kind of does go both ways. I guess
you can, if you don't want
ways.
To, you can be like, okay, well,
we can abdicate.
Yeah. But I don't know. What about you, Robin?
I agree with that sentiment, absolutely. But it doesn't just apply to the monarchy. Anybody whose birth gives them unwarranted privilege. I think obviously there's inevitability to privilege. Like, we're all privileged because we were born white men in Britain.
In a first world country, yeah.
Yeah, we could be far worse off than we are. We're also born to, I think, fairly good circumstances. I don't know about you two. My family actually lived on benefits. I was lucky enough to be born in the country where the benefit system existed and welfare was able to support them and support me, which helped me get a good education, and here I am today.
Bloody good education.
So I agree with not bowing to people of extreme privilege, but at the same time I agree with you two. You have to pause for a moment before you react and before you respond to somebody and think, wait a second, just how privileged are they compared to me? And how privileged am I compared to others?
And there are obviously those in the royal family who maybe take their privilege a little bit too far.
I think it's an understatement.
Yeah,
a little bit.
I feel like you're about to elaborate on that, Alex.
I am. I actually wanted to talk about. Did you both see the Prince Andrew interview?
You could miss it, really.
Yeah,
it was a big news story over here. Yeah. Basically,
it seemed to come out of the blue to me. I remember as soon as I saw the headlines, like he's doing this interview, I was just like, that's a bad idea, isn't it?
It's never advisable.
It's never a good
idea. I mean, it's great that he's done it because digs him into an even deeper hole.
Yes, this
is fantastic.
Yeah. Well, we might be getting ahead of Alex's story.
Yeah.
No, I basically just wanted to talk about that interview and some of the things that we learned from it. Because on the one hand, like the things that he's probably done, like I'm not on his side. I think he's probably... 95% sure that he's guilty. I would say obviously there's that little tiny bit of doubt because you just don't know, but I mean he's probably guilty, and it's a horrible story, but some of the things that he said in the interview were just insane. Like they were like incredible, like in a morbid way quite funny.
Pizza Express woking was something that came
that
up
was
right?
just
it's
mad.
Just such like Partridge things.
Alan,
he was making Alan excuses Polish. For
So explain to me exactly what's the background to this whole interview? What's going on?
So the background is that Prince Andrew was notably one of the friends of Jeffrey Epstein.
Yes.
And they met, I think, in 1999. And according to him, they were introduced through Jeffrey Epstein's girlfriend at the time, Ghislaine Maxwell.
Right.
She went to university with Prince Andrew, and that's how they knew each other. And she allegedly introduced Jeffrey Epstein to Prince Andrew. He's along with a long list of other famous people and, high up officials who consorted with Jeffrey Epstein, including, of course, Bill Clinton and Donald Trump. He stayed at Jeffrey Epstein's house in New York, several times, I think, traveled on his private jet, went to his private island, all of that business. And I think...
Where things were supposed to have taken place, right?
With
younger girls.
Exactly. And I think it was 2006, I want to say, that Jeffrey Epstein was first convicted and served 18 months in prison. Right. But that was like as part of a plea deal where he acknowledged that he had sexually assaulted underage girls. But this story got even worse for Prince Andrew, because after Jeffrey Epstein was released from prison, he was seen, he visited him in his Manhattan residence for 4 days.
After the 18
months. 4 days.
After
18 months he'd spent.
After he had already been convicted as a sex offender. He stayed with him for 4 days and was spotted with him. There were pictures taken. There was even one shocking clip where Jeffrey Epstein leaves his house along with a young girl. And you can see Prince Andrew in the doorway behind him as he's leaving, which is a pretty bad clip. Pretty damning. So this interview was pretty much after, obviously, Jeffrey Epstein killed himself in jail, which he obviously didn't. That was in the news recently. All of this has kind of been brought up again, and Prince Andrew's been back in the news. And then last week, was it even last week? It was like a few days ago.
Just a couple of days ago.
Just a couple of days ago. He gave a Newsnight interview, one-on-one. It was like an hour-long interview where he wanted to kind of set the record straight, and it ended up being an absolute car crash.
I imagine.
It was a bad decision.
I imagine he was advised against it.
Yeah,
I think and that he's gone, no, I'm innocent. I should be able to go and say what I need to say. And then it's gone on there pig-headed and made it even worse.
That's the big problem with it, is that to a certain extent, what he says is kind of understandable. Is what he's trying to do is tell his side of the story. But it's just the way he comes across is so just like, you're in another world, mate.
Yeah.
People don't think that way.
Yeah.
It's just so out of touch. And I think that's the biggest damage he's doing right now.
And also, it feels very disingenuous the way that he goes about answering questions, like he has premeditated answers.
Absolutely.
He delivers it so badly, even though they're clearly premeditated answers.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like, there's this picture of him with one of the victims.
Yeah.
And he was accused of, she was 17 at the time, and he was accused of, you know, hanging out with her in Epstein's place. They went out to a club, had drinks, and then he, you know, had sex with her.
She says Epstein forced her to have sex with him.
And there's a famous picture where he's in Epstein's house with his hand on her waist. And he was asked point blank in this interview, is that your hand on her side? And his response was something like, you can't prove that that's my hand. It's like, what? Innocent person, you would think, would just say, no, this picture is faked. If you're so confident in your innocence.
It was
bizarre.
So he's basically trying to say it's Photoshopped without saying it's Photoshopped.
That's a bizarre thing. Like, he was definitely very strongly implying that photo was fake, which I don't think it is. But even then, it was like, why don't you just say it? Just say it's been faked.
But like when his response, I'm sure you'll come on to it, his response to... replying to what Epstein had done and saying it was, what was the language he used to say that? He said it was not unbecoming.
Oh, yes.
His behavior was unbecoming.
Yeah.
It's like,
That's an understatement of the year.
Sex trafficking, in fact. Yeah. Well, sorry, he was awaiting trial, wasn't he, for sex trafficking?
Well, I think, in fairness, that was probably the most shocking part of the interview was his lack of regret for his association with Jeffrey Epstein. Like, he was asked whether he regretted being affiliated with him.
Yeah.
And he said no, because one of the qualities of Jeffrey Epstein was that he... was very good at bringing important people together.
It was the reasoning was just so unimportant. And so, it reminded me of in a really horrible way, of David Brent when he goes, I've got good news and bad news about people being, and he's like, the bad news is you'll be made redundant, but I've gotten a promotion. It's like bad news and irrelevant news.
Yeah.
The irrelevancy of him gaining new connections. No one cares.
Yeah. He said,
you shouldn't care.
He said, knowing Epstein had some seriously beneficial outcomes at the time when he had left a career in the Navy and begun one as a trade and industry special representative. The people that I met and the opportunities that I was given to learn either by him or because of him were actually very useful.
Well done.
Yeah.
Very good. Good response. What was he thinking? Everyone knows that you're going to have connections because of the people you know.
Yeah.
Everyone knows that already. That didn't need to be said.
Yeah.
The people are looking for that empathetic response of course I regret not knowing him because he turned out to be this monster, and unfortunately I didn't necessarily know that at the time, and I was ignorant and didn't look into it, but
And yeah, there's
people who are expecting that kind of response as opposed to this kind of, well, no, matter of fact, I benefited, but of course. It's
the lack of contrition is shocking.
Yeah.
Just apologize, for crying out loud. Mm. Just apologize.
Another pretty bizarre kind of excuse that he made was that, so when he met with Epstein in 2010 in New York and stayed with him for 4 days after Epstein had been convicted and jailed for 18 months, he said that he visited him to put an end to the friendship. To say, because he said,
that's how it works,
he
right?
said, that's how it works. He was too, he said, I took the judgment call that because this was serious and I felt like that doing it over the phone was the chicken's way of doing it, I had to go and see him and talk to him. But he stayed with him for 4 days, went to a dinner party with him, and was seen walking through the park with him.
Hand in
the
hand.
Whole purpose of the whole purpose of this trip was because it, you know, he couldn't be seen with him anymore.
Yeah.
Like that, and that he was going over there to tell him.
Yeah. That's the weird thing.
And then he went through a walk through Central Park with him.
But in the same interview, he was saying things like, I'm paraphrasing, like, "Oh, we weren't that close. You know, I didn't know him that well. Yeah. I only met him in 1999.
He's always said that, though, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's always said that. But that's the thing. Like, if you're breaking off a friendship with somebody who you don't know that well, you don't stay with them for four. It's like if you could tolerate each other's company for 4 solid days, go to parties together.
Oh, exactly.
What else were you up to in the time that you knew each other?
Yeah.
Doesn't look good.
Another bizarre, bizarre response that he gave was in relation to this accusations that were made by Virginia Roberts, who this was the 17-year-old who in 2001 claimed that she dined with the prince, danced with him at a nightclub in London, and had sex with him at Ghislaine Maxwell's house in Belgravia. And she said that she was very specific in her testimony and said that the prince was profusely sweating.
Oh, yes.
And his response to this was not like, I've never met this person, don't know who she is, she's made the story up or whatever. It was, I didn't sweat at the time because I had suffered what I would describe as an overdose of adrenaline in the Falklands War when I was shot at. And I simply, it was almost impossible for me to sweat at that time, but now he can.
Oh, what a weird...
So he said, because of a medical condition, I couldn't sweat, so that's a lie.
It's literally the kind of outrageous lie you hear in courts when criminals are like, I wasn't... Yeah, it makes no sense.
It just seems so scripted as well.
It's when you're so overly scripted. Specific about
it's trying to
things.
Find.
It's when you know is a telltale sign of lying. I think.
Well, it's also knowing that's going to come up, right?
Yeah.
It's knowing that he's obviously seen that that take either in the media or somewhere else, or has been told about the question beforehand.
Yeah,
he's come up with a response that kind of plugs that hole, but it just looks so scripted and again disingenuous.
But he's answering the most important part of the question to him. He's not thinking about what the actual question is.
Yeah.
It's odd as well, because he's talking about the Falklands War, which was 1982, right?
Mm.
So he's saying he didn't sweat.
19 years.
For at least...
Was it 2001?
2001. For at least 19 years, he didn't sweat. And now suddenly... And now he can? And it was because of an overdose of adrenaline? No, I'm not...
Was there pictures of him like really sweaty as well that came out?
I don't know if there's any pictures.
I don't know if there's any sweat visible in that picture with him and... Virginia Roberts, but there's definitely pictures of him sweaty since then.
It was also funny thing about, defense,
like, it was also like the clothes he was wearing. Didn't he say something about that? He's like, I don't wear clothes like that. I wear the clothes.
That was
like,
another thing.
Just a shirt and trousers.
In the picture with him, he's wearing a shirt and jeans or something.
Yeah.
And he said, that couldn't have been me because when I go out in London, I wear a suit and tie.
Yes.
That is my overseas wear.
Yeah.
What he wears when he's traveling overseas.
Yeah.
Which is just an insane.
Seems like a prick, doesn't he?
It's an insane argument to make when there's a there's a photo of you with the victim.
Yeah.
And that's his take. He also said that the photo looked like it had been taken upstairs in Jeffrey Epstein's house. And he said, I don't...
No recollection about that.
Yeah, he said, I have no recollection of ever going upstairs. What I don't understand about that is how did he know it was taken upstairs then?
Yeah.
The photo was taken upstairs and I've never been upstairs.
Yeah.
How did you recognize where it was taken then?
So put you in a hole, doesn't it? If I've never been upstairs, someone could then prove that you've been upstairs. Whereas if you say there wasn't a party upstairs, I'm sure I wasn't there at a party upstairs. You're at least broadening your defense,
right?
Yeah,
that's true. Yeah.
It just seems such a...
Creating more doubt,
Kind of dry
this answer. Bizarre thing.
Okay, so of course he comes out bad out of this.
Yeah.
Do you reckon this will do any actual significant damage going forwards, though?
Well, I mean... It already has. The top news story this morning was that he has now announced that he's stepping back from his royal duties, which involves like running a bunch of different kind of charities and organizations.
Yeah. Queen's definitely had a say in that, hasn't she?
Well,
I would be surprised if she hasn't been involved. Yeah.
And yeah, so he received a salary from the Royal Treasury, I believe, every year, and travel expenses and that kind of thing, which he will no longer be receiving. And this is for the foreseeable future, but I think that this is basically a way of him not being forced to abdicate. And I think this could be a temporary thing, maybe until all this dies down and in a few years he'll come back
slowly
and
start to
get back involved with everything.
At the same time, he's old enough that this might just be the beginning of a very long retirement.
Yeah, possibly.
The thing is, as long as he's not convicted, there'll be some people that still would accept having him along.
Yeah, there'll always be somebody there. Yeah. For him. He's a royal in the end. That counts for a lot.
I think, I think you're right. I think people generally only see the negatives of the royal family when in instances like this and in instances where they are unwittingly brought into kind of the political sphere, like we saw recently with the whole Brexit thing when approving the law that then was overturned by the Supreme Court and people were like, why did she agree to that? Well, she didn't really have a choice. She was trying not to be political. But then this is just an example of, oh, actually, the royal family have such privilege that they are basically immune to any kind of wrongdoing. And this,
well, I mean, the Queen is actually immune. She has immunity.
Yeah. But like this whole Prince Andrew thing is just like, oh, wow, they actually did have, you know, he used his privilege to hurt other people.
Yeah.
I think that it'll be interesting to see how this negatively affects the opinion polls of the royal family.
Yeah.
I mean, if he's out the public limelight, in the spotlight, I imagine that it won't affect the royal family in the longer term as much as we might expect, especially because it's not the direct lineage to the throne as well.
Yeah.
That's the other thing.
If it were Prince Charles, it would be a massive deal. But because it's Prince Andrew, it's like...
Yeah.
It's a big deal for him, but it's not necessarily a big deal for the royal family.
It'll cast a shadow for a little while. But
as
you say, he's a little bit older too. He can just retire from the public eye a little bit.
It'll cast a shadow for another, 4 months?
Dragon.
When's the baby due?
Oh, good point.
As soon as that thing is out, it'll be like, hey, we love him again.
Yeah.
Really cute children.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was my story. Depressing. I felt like it was something that we kind of had to talk about.
No, we did, for sure.
There was one aspect you didn't discuss, which I hoped you'd bring up.
Oh, so sorry to upset you, Rob. What was it?
Pizza Express.
Pizza Express in Woking. Yeah, yes. Well, Martin brought it up. Yeah. But I mean, that was a mad thing as well.
Yeah.
His excuse for not... this was... He said like why he wasn't out partying with this victim who is accusing him of going out partying and going back to Ghislaine Maxwell's house and having sex.
Yeah.
He said because he was with his children in Pizza Express in Woking. Who remembers that 20 years later?
I know, it's so specific. On that
but
night.
What I loved about that is that Pizza Express, for those of you who don't know, are basically hanging on by a thread right now.
Yeah.
And they're just thinking, come on, okay, we're pulling it together. The business is getting back on track. And then suddenly Prince Andrew comes out and says that.
His alibi for not abusing a child.
His alibi for not being a paedophile.
Is it 2 billion that they're
In debt.
They're massively in debt.
Huge. And
they were like, come on, throw us a bone.
You know what? It might help them.
It might help them.
Just because the name's out
there. We're
talking
about it now, It's the free chosen, advertising, isn't it?
The chosen pizza place of Prince Andrew.
I mean, his kids. Pizza Express can provide your alibi. Why not go there? God. But it just intrigues me that, again, we've got Jeffrey Epstein, child abuse, and pizza in...
It's weird, isn't it? Weird coincidence.
Connection.
The conspiracy starts here in the years to come. Every time there's a child abuse scandal.
Pizza, yeah.
Although, just for the record, in the UK, the age of consent is 16. So actually,
I keep
saying child abuse, but she was not a child in terms of sexual consent.
In UK law.
Well, he was also asked if he would be willing to testify under oath with the US investigators.
And refused, hasn't he?
Well, he said that he'd have to consult with his legal advice. Which is a bit of a non-answer, and I suspect that he won't be.
Yeah,
I don't think he'll be leaving the UK.
Yeah, although that is the wise thing to do, right? Regardless of whether you're innocent or guilty, consult
Consult with legal advice. I thought you meant
that's a pretty standard bog standard answer.
Sure, yeah, but also you knew that that question was going to come up. You would think that he would have already consulted.
Yes. Yeah.
Maybe. Good point. And come to that answer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, that is all I want to talk about with Prince regarding Prince Andrew.
Yeah. What do you guys think? Please let us know in the comments or on Twitter.
Anyway,
are you guys ready for a bit of a
quiz? I think we need some cheering up now.
Yeah.
Aren't
you?
Okay, well, get your buzzers ready. Gentlemen, there shall be 10 questions. May I hear your buzzers, please? Robin. What was that?
Well, the music, the little trumpet fanfare at the beginning. Great Scott.
Is that Batman?
No. It sounds a bit like Batman. No, that's Alan Silvestri's score to Back to the Future. And Great Scott is Dr. Emma Brown.
Okay. Thinking Back to the Future.
Back to the Future for Robin and Alex.
Brace yourselves, because it's made a return. I have the high ground! Hopefully now, this time with me at the helm.
I don't know what happened last time. That was you, wasn't it?
I have the high ground.
For those who haven't heard, there was an episode about five episodes ago, roughly, maybe more.
Something like that.
Where Robin's high ground buzzer
just kept going
and repeating.
There's something wrong with it.
Heard about 30 times during that quiz.
I have the high ground.
Madness.
The high ground. It was madness.
Are you ready for today's quiz?
Is there a theme to this quiz? No, or?
It's a general knowledge quiz.
Okay. Doesn't have to be a theme. I just
put my thinking cap on.
Just keep in mind. I'm not giving anything away. Just get into it.
Okay.
So Robin Knox Johnston was the first person to do what in April 1969?
Sir Robin Knox Johnston.
Robin Knox Johnston.
First person to do something in 1969. Mm. It wasn't walk on the moon, because that was Neil Armstrong.
It was not.
It's true. First to fake a moon landing.
That was Stanley Kubrick. Everyone knows that.
I mean, this could literally be anything if we don't know.
Yeah. I mean, he's British, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Think of a feat. You know, it has to be a feat, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Can't be something rubbish.
Who's the first to do what?
Could be to do with vehicle? I have the
high ground! Did he go to the bottom of the Mariana Trench?
No.
Ooh. Was he the first person to travel faster than 200 miles land speed?
No, he wasn't. Oh. But it combines elements of both of your answers.
Mariana's Trench. Land speed record 200 miles.
Not that specific for both. Either,
okay.
For either of them, not specifically.
He was the fastest man in the Mariana Trench.
I just realised this is wrong. I was going to say first person to swim the channel, but that's not true.
No.
It was done a lot earlier.
I don't know. Can we have a clue? Other than it combines elements of both of our answers.
Yes. Yes. It includes boats.
Okay.
I have the high ground! Did he break the sound barrier in a boat? Has anyone done that? Is that possible?
I'm not sure it is. Was he the first person to cross the Pacific solo?
Very close, but not quite right. It's the first person to sail solo non-stop around the world.
Around the world.
I don't know why I didn't jump at that. Yeah,
Mariana Trench, the sea, travel, elements.
It's just such a big thing to do.
I was focused on speed. Yeah.
First person to sail solo non-stop around the world.
Okay.
Interesting.
Question number two.
So did Roman get that point?
No, I didn't get that.
Good.
What is the Atrax Robustus?
Well,
Atrax Robustus. Again, we're heading into university trench territory.
Atrax Robustus.
Atrax
Robustus sounds robust. Atrax. Isn't that that's a thing?
Spelling is A-T-R-A-X. Knowledge. I might have pronounced it wrong.
Well,
it is one word.
Is it a thing that we still use? That's asking for a clue.
But. Okay, clue. It's a type of animal.
Atrax Robustus.
Right. Atrax. How strange.
Is it still living today, or is it extinct?
Atrax Robustus.
I have the high ground. Is it a domestic house cat?
No.
Oh. Robust. Yeah, took a big leap there. I know. Great payoff.
Is it an elephant?
No. Oh. Now, I'm not looking... I am looking for what it is, but I'm looking for a very specific attribute of this thing, okay? It's the most something of animals.
Oh, okay. Oh.
Of its particular kind. It's the most something of its particular kind.
Atrax robustus.
Yes.
The most something
so
of
like
its
as
kind.
So, like, as in a cheetah would be the fastest
lion. Oh, I see, right.
Oh, okay.
So it is the... It's a superlative. It's the most something of its kind.
Oh, okay, I just buzzed, but actually, no, I want to retract that buzz. Mm. Can I do that? Is that the
rules?
Yeah,
you can retract a buzz, fine.
Great, now the pressure's
on
this
one. For this one, because I gave more info after the buzz.
Yeah.
Okay. It's the most something most of its something. Kind. Atrax robustus.
If you're not sure, I can give another clue.
I'll have a go. Is it the strongest insect?
No, but it's along the right lines, for sure.
Okay. Ooh, that's a good one, though. Is it... the biggest animal?
No. Right, I'll give another clue.
So it started again. No.
Oh, goodness.
I had the high ground.
It is a dangerous animal.
Ooh.
It's the most something of its kind.
The most poisonous? Venomous?
What is the animal? Whoa, okay. What is the animal?
I'm so confused by this question.
No, but it's... It's the most something.
Oh, okay. Is it?
Along the right lines. For I sure. have the
high ground. Is it the most venomous snake in the world?
No.
Spider.
Is it the most venomous spider?
No.
It's the most venomous spider in the world.
I was actually going to say that.
No.
Its other name is the Sydney funnel web spider.
Oh, I've heard of funnel web spiders.
Yeah, I was thinking the other clue was saying the first part of its name is the Sydney funnel.
I was so confused then because I... Like...
Sorry, it was a little bit confusing.
Mm. No, I think I get... Yeah, it was... We're done.
Yeah, okay. Well done. Well done, both of you, but wrong got the answer.
Right.
Number three. Which legendary character from a British sitcom famously said, "People like Coldplay and voted for the Nazis. You can't trust people."
I have the high ground.
Actually, I'm trying to remember which one it was. Super Hans from Peep Show.
It's Super Hans.
Initially, I was thinking it was Mark Corrigan, but
it was Super Hans.
I've not seen Peep Show, so I'm at a disadvantage.
Oh, you should. I know the quote though.
You talk about it, so I should know.
Said it a few times on the podcast. Question four. In the book of Genesis, which cities were destroyed with fire and brimstone due to their sinful ways for the people living there?
Sodom and Gomorrah.
Well done. Yeah. Sodom and Gomorrah.
Where we get the word sodomy from.
Exactly.
It's actually...
ding, 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 ding.
Gomorrah wasn't quite so catchy.
Question number five. In cricket, what is a 2020 match?
Gonna throw this out there. Is it a cricket match taking place in 2020?
Oh.
No, but I like it.
Technically it is though. So
is it a cricket match where both sides can see equally?
Can see like it.
2020 vision, yeah.
Yeah.
2020
cricket match. 20 players on each team?
That'd be massive, isn't it? No.
I don't know. How many players are there?
11.
I don't know cricket rules, so I'm just going to say some words.
let's see where it goes.
Something to do, 20 overs for 20 wickets, something that...
Bit. Both of those are right. I'll give you it, because that is very close.
Oh, come
on. So each team bats for 20 overs. And there are 20 wickets as well, but they're always 20. They're always 20 wickets.
Alex bats for the other side. Just saying.
There we go.
What's that
Fair
mean?
Enough. What's that, 2-1? I think it's 2-1.
No, 2-1, I think.
So I've got two
questions.
Oh, no,
I have got two. Yeah, it's 2-1.
Yeah, 2-1. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I wasn't saying you had one. I was saying you.
Okay, yeah.
Question number six. What metal gets its name from the Latin ferrum?
I'm sorry, what?
Metal.
Oh, metal, okay.
Iron.
Yes.
Yes.
Ferrum, F-E.
F-E, yeah, there you go.
3-2.
Fair enough.
Da-da-da-da-da. Chemin de fer is the French for railway. Just so you know.
Very good.
Keep throwing in these bonus facts, so one day I'll get the point.
The condition uveitis affects a person's what?
Ovaries?
No.
Oh.
What?
Uveitis.
Isn't that uveitis? Oh, I'm confused. I thought that was like a Latin word to do with the womb.
Oh.
Could be wrong.
Effects. How do you spell it?
Uveitis.
Oh.
Uveitis.
Was it I-T-I-S or E-T-I-S?
Uveitis.
Right, because itis is a swelling normally. It's an inflammation.
Mm.
So it's a uve swelling. A swelling in the uve.
I have the high ground.
A swelling in the throat.
No.
Oh.
Liver?
No. Okay, no. Clue. You have two of these.
Oh.
I have the high ground.
Lungs?
No.
Testicles?
No.
Oh, damn it.
Kidneys?
No.
What?
Oh. Oh, wait a minute.
Actually, I guess there's quite a few things that we have.
Actually, now that I think about it,
that
was a lot trickier than I expected.
Straight for the testicles.
Ears.
No.
Eyes.
Yes.
Oh.
Eyes, 3-all. So what does it affect?
Brought it backwards.
So eyes, correct. It affects your eyesight. Vision. Yeah, your vision. Yeah cool.
Yeah. Knew that.
Number 8, 3-all.
Okay.
What fruit includes variants including Cavendish, the Blue Java, and the Lady Finger?
Oh.
Cavendish. What fruit?
Mm. Yeah.
I have the high ground!
Hello, Lady Finger. That's
pear.
No. Any advance on pear?
I've heard Cavendish before in fruit terms. Mm.
Darn it. I'm trying to remember what fruit... Pretty sure it's not apples. I'll say it anyway. Apples.
No.
Yeah, it's not apples. So it's something that...
I've definitely had this in a fruit salad.
Yeah, I know. I've been offered these things. I feel.
I have the high ground.
Winner. Melon.
No.
Oh. No.
Fruit flavoring. I bet there's people at home just like, we know exactly what this is. Was it Cavendish?
Cavendish.
And something, and Ladyfinger.
Cavendish, Blue Java, and Ladyfinger.
Blue Java.
Yeah.
Blue Java.
Does blue actually reflect the colour of the fruit? Or is that just one of those misleading names that they give it?
I reckon, I reckon you're right.
I think it's not really. Raspberries.
No.
Yeah, knew that was wrong.
Can we have some kind of clue or...
Okay. It's a fruit that is encased. There are quite a few that are. It's just up here.
I was gonna guess pineapple.
No.
Oh, orange.
No. One more H.
I don't know why I buzzed then. I have no
See?
Banana.
I was gonna say banana, but then I was thinking, are there any other varieties of banana?
That's why it rings a bell. I like bananas. I've eaten ladyfingers.
Good. Cavendish, I think, is the most common in the UK in the supermarkets.
Right, okay.
Very well done. So okay, question number 4-3. 4-3.
Yeah.
Question 9. From which insect does the most painful sting in the world come from?
Insect? Most painful sting in the world?
Good question.
Are scorpions an insect? They're not insects.
They're arachnids. Don't know why I'm helping you out. Feel free to.
That's fine. Yeah.
Free to guess.
I feel like it's going to be a trick answer.
Insect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like if I say, I bloody hate wasps, so I'm going to say wasp.
It's not a wasp.
Yeah. Didn't think so. But okay, is that like is that level of answer like not a species of? Something is just a general.
Line. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I have the high ground.
Well, maybe.
There's a specific type of what it is.
A hornet.
But no. But if you get the general thing, then.
Yeah. Hornets bite, don't they? Or do they sting? I thought hornets were biters.
Biters. Biter the biters.
You're a biter.
I thought they were like wasps. They were just bigger more meatier wasps. Yeah. I thought.
Terrifying.
Could be wrong.
But
hornets.
Oh, right, yeah, I think so. I had one of the giant, you know, those European hornets.
Yeah.
One of them in the garden.
Killer bees?
No.
Not the bees.
The bears.
Was in there a shark?
Are we in the right area?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, insects, right? I guess one more and then I'll give you a clue.
I don't know. Something that stings. How about?
I have the high ground.
What about mosquitoes?
They bite, don't they?
No.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do they sting? They've got stings.
No, they bite and then they suck.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah.
Fine. You win.
This particular creature usually just kind of crawls along, walks along, crawls along. But they can also have flying variants.
Oh, it is. Ants.
Yes. And fire ants? One. It's not fire ants.
I have the heart.
Soldier ants?
No.
No.
Trigger the answer.
Yeah.
Bullet ants.
Bullet ants.
Okay.
Right.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I heard of them.
Now, if this comes down as a draw, the next one, Robin, I have to think up a bonus question because currently I didn't have one.
Oh.
But hopefully, actually, I hope you get it. Be good. Okay, question number 10. What connects all the answers above?
Oh, I knew there was some kind of connection.
Hey, this very is good. Good. Well
very
done.
Good. Yeah. Very good. What were the answers?
Banana.
Bullet ants. Banana?
Little ants, bananas,
funnel web spider, cricket. What was the cricket one?
I have the high ground.
Then to bust.
Oh,
what's the cricket one? Pass.
Oh, 20.
You bat for 20 overs. Yeah,
20 overs.
Yeah.
What other questions were there in this quiz?
So I think, yeah,
it's been so long ago.
It just felt like a long time since it started.
I'm going to have a guess. Is it something to do with poison or...
No.
Because I was thinking
so you go through it. There are... the first question was going solo around the world. The second one... there was also the spider.
Mm-hmm.
Then there was also batting for 20 overs.
Mm-hmm.
There was super hands. There was different types of bananas.
Yeah.
There was ants.
Ants. Batting for 20 overs. Super hands.
This is superheroes.
Yeah.
Nice.
Ant-Man, Batman, Banana Man.
Nice.
Banana Man.
Nice. Han Solo was a little bit of herring there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very good.
Very good. So is that four all?
I believe it is.
Any kind of bonus question now.
Down to the bonus
with
question.
That's good.
What connects?
That's cool. Because the natural world connection was also like, but then crossing, going around the globe, I was like, oh, no, it doesn't.
Yeah. Gamora.
Oh, yeah.
Solomon Gamora.
Oh, yeah.
Clever.
Very clever. Okay.
Final question.
With a mouthful of munchie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For those watching on YouTube, fantastic. You'll be able to see this. But for those not, I've got a bag of munchies in front of me. How many calories are there in 100 grams of munchies?
Oh, wow.
Closest wins.
In 100 grams.
100 grams of these famous munchies that we're not sponsored by.
We actually aren't. So 100 grams calories.
Okay, I'm trying to work this out.
There's chocolate, there's caramel, there's biscuit.
I'm going to go ahead and say... In 100 grams.
100 grams.
I reckon 400 calories.
Okay. Robin, any...
281.
The answer is... Drum roll from myself. 485. Alex is the winner.
Bloody hell.
So we're all fat now.
284
fantastic.
Calories. Oh, well, good quiz, Mike.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Yeah. Very good. Well done.
Definitely the main part of the quiz was better than the final question.
just ending it by shaming munchies.
Exactly.
Came so close.
They are too
so
nice,
close.
Though.
So close.
But no, that was a good quiz. I like that. Yeah. That was very good. Hope you guys at home enjoyed the quiz. Please let us know your scores and be honest about it.
Mm. Did you get the connection before we did?
Probably.
Yeah.
Right. And stay tuned to our Patreon supporters for the Patreon-exclusive podcast, which we're going to record right now.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it. Right.
See you later, guys. Next time.
Bye.
Bye-bye.